Amy, we've got a bunch of little nieces and nephews between us, but we've also got a catch-all gift that all of our siblings love for their newborns.
You're totally right, and it's Pampers Swaddlers, because Pampers Swaddlers wick wetness away to keep babies drier and subsequently parents happier.
Pampers Swaddlers absorb wetness better versus the leading value brand and provide up to 100% leak-proof skin protection and up to 0% skin irritation.
Pampers Swaddlers are dermatologist approved by the Skin Health Alliance. They're hypoallergenic and they're free of parabens and latex.
Now you can try Swaddlers with new Pampers-free and gentle wipes for healthy baby skin. These wipes won't tear. In fact, they grip mess, shall we say, more firmly and clean better, leaving baby skin dry, soft, and smooth.
For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician-recommended brand.
Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers Cash. Redeem your Pampers Cash for exclusive Pampers coupon savings and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers Cash has no cash value.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Fresh Take from What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood. This is Margaret.
And this is Amy. And today we're talking to Diane Bowden. She is the host of the Minimalist Moms podcast, and she's the author of Minimalist Moms, Living and Parenting with Simplicity. Diane lives in Ohio with her husband and three kids. Welcome, Diane.
Thank you so much for having me, guys.
So, Diane, let's start with the very basics. Tell us how you define minimalism.
Minimalism. So I do think it looks different for everyone. I always say that when I'm talking to whomever. I think that I have adapted more of a life of intention as opposed of every wall is sparse. I don't own anything. I have three kids. So it's going to look a little bit different than maybe a single guy living on his own. But I think for me, minimalism is really a tool to simplify my life. And it has worked so far for 12 years.
And is minimalism, are we born to minimalism? Can we learn minimalism? Do you feel like you were a natural minimalist, or is it something that you really had to think about and adapt to?
No, it was definitely something that I adapted to. So I'm sorry for anyone that's ever heard this story before, but I will tell it because it was a profound moment for me. My husband and I were in our early 20s and we were searching for something in my parents' basement. And he looked at me and said, look at these things that are now in boxes that were once your dad's hard-earned working hours. And it really struck me because I had been working full-time since I was out of high school. I did the school and working full-time thing, but I had nothing to show for it. And after we got married, I was a little bit better with my money, but I just felt like I was spending frivolously. And so I guess there was a little bit of frugality that came to mind there, but I kind of just thought, I don't want things in boxes one day. I'd rather have experiences in my mind that will last forever versus these things that are maybe just trendy or fun for a moment, and then they just end up in a box. So we never really had a conversation there about, oh, we're going to start pursuing minimalism. It was just a change of where I wanted to put our focus, or where I wanted to put my focus at least. And he was already, I don't know. I don't know if men, I haven't discovered if I think men are more minimalist than women, but I just felt like it was something we were unified on. Let's spend money on our experiences, not things. Let's work towards just a life of intention together. So, I mean, the things were actually easier to whittle away than I'm learning my schedule and my mind. Now that I've gotten rid of the things, I have the space and wherewithal to start decluttering my mind. And that I'm finding to be a lot more difficult because you have to be, it seems, a lot more intentional. And some things seem to be out of my control, whereas my home seemed to be more in my control. I can control the things that are coming in, but I can't control other people. So sometimes I feel like minimalism, or even just a life of simplicity and intention, can be more difficult once you really start to dig in.
And you really hit the nail on the head before when you said maybe it's easier for non-parents. I mean, of course it's easier for non-parents, right? There's just so much less stuff accumulating in your front hall when you're a single person living alone, or you're a couple without kids or whatever. It's when they like hit first grade and the permission slips start coming home and the birthday party favors sit on the chair in the front hall and the 18 pairs of shoes. That's when it really starts to accumulate, right? And that seems to me like that's the first part is sort of acceptance. Like, yeah, you are going to have too much stuff in your house once you have kids.
Yeah. And you can't, again, you can control yourself. So I think sometimes a lot of women I talk to, they're like, well, I can't even get my husband on board with living this way. And it's like, well, just do the best that you can with your closet, with your spaces in the household, with the areas that are more communal. Have those conversations about what those spaces look like, even with your kids. Bring your kids into those spaces. Give your husband a place where he can be a little bit more chaotic. My husband has his workshop, and that's where he can live how he wants. But in the communal areas, it's like we're all trying to exist together here. So let's try to put in to practice the best systems that work for all of us. And sometimes that's not, no shade to the home edit, but sometimes that doesn't look like your HGTV home edit aesthetic. It might just be what's best functioning for you. So, but yeah, I think with the kids, you can't control them. You can't control your husband, but you can control you and what you're bringing in. So once you shift your mindset to that, it's given me a lot of freedom.
I think also Amy was kind of starting to touch on it, and I hadn't thought of it that way. I think with kids, there's a lot of passive stuff that kind of comes in the house. It's six bicycles and there were all three kids, like five bicycles, five Halloween costumes every year, five sets of Christmas presents from all the different or whatever, that there's just stuff that kind of flows.
The thing that really came to a head for me this week was the remote control cars. I was talking about this with my sister, who has four boys. The remote control cars and then the remotes that you can't tell which car they go with. And they don't really ever work so well after the day your kid receives this thing. So she has like eight cars and eight remotes that don't seem to work together. And yet, like, they were birthday presents, so she's not supposed to get rid of them. Or is she? Like, the kids' stuff is just a particularly kind of frustrating.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I was just cleaning out my car and I found this remote control spider and the remote control to it. And it doesn't work anymore. And they got it not too long ago. And you know, I have a little space, a little limbo, as I call it, of a box that those things that aren't typically played with or maybe forgotten about, they go into that box. And then after I set a specific deadline, it's usually after about a month. If they're not asked for, I just get rid of them. For my 9-year-old, I kind of bring her on board a little bit more. But I think you're constantly assessing what needs to stay and what needs to go. And again, as your kids grow older, bring them in on that conversation. I think I don't ever want this type of lifestyle to backfire on me. But it is something that I'm constantly going through. Even the clothes. Every time I do a load of laundry, I just kind of assess, okay, what do I have? And then I have a box right there of donations. So I always say it sounds so overthought, like I must be some control freak, type A person. I don't think that I am. I think it's just become such a habit in my life that, again, this minimalism idea is a tool that helps me have more freedom to where I'm not feeling the overwhelm necessarily of my things.
And I think there's the passive version, right? Stuff that's just like the barfing backpacks that are like, here's 86, you know, art projects and pieces of paper that maybe, especially as your kids get older, like, will they at some point need these for the midterm or the final? Like, I get nervous about throwing out kids' schoolwork. And there's that kind of river flow that comes in. And then I know for my family, there's also the active, which is more the sort of, oh, let's just get that from Amazon. Like everything we think of can be delivered to our door, or even just being grocery shopping and like, oh, I like that. I like that. And kind of throwing away half-eaten boxes of cereal that people forgot about. And I think for us, that is where we made a pact in January. I mean, our kind of New Year's resolution, like, let's all have a meeting. Or my husband and I have to say out loud to each other if we're going to order something off of Amazon, because we just tend, I think, to be like, you need what? Post-its? I'm like, we have 5,000 Post-its. We now, the other day we were cleaning out the kitchen and we have 3-gallon jugs of soy sauce. Like, soy sauce is not something you use by the gallon. Luckily, I don't think it goes bad quickly either. But like, why do we have 3 jugs of soy sauce? Because Amazon will bring it to our door when we think we're out of it. And I think that, does that track for you? Like, there's a easier place to stop the incoming.
Yeah, I mean, I think you do have to sit down especially with your spouse or your partner, and say, what does it look like? Where do we want to spend our money? Where do we want to be intentional? If we need to set up those conversations, my husband and I don't talk about our Amazon purchases, but I think, again, we're into these habits where we're
right.
We just really,
you probably don't have as much of a problem as we do.
But no, but even still going through my list, sometimes I'm like, why did I think that I needed that? And it is scary. It is an honest slap in the face when you scroll back through your Amazon and see what you've spent your money and how it adds up. That is a really scary thing. I don't know. I think taking an assessment and maybe calculating the price of the things that you wasted your money on can just help it bring it to the prefrontal cortex to get it into that space of rationality versus just like your lizard brain, the back of your brain that's just like operating because it feels good and it's pleasurable in the moment. And it's a fleeting emotion that's being filled by something that you actually don't need. You actually needed rest or food or connection. And I think especially as moms, we get into those habits of just mindlessly scrolling and buying. And it's like, we never really needed that was just to fill a void of something else that we didn't get.
We're talking to Diane Bowden. She is the host of the Minimalist Moms podcast, and we'll be right back. Margaret, I've got a go-to baby shower gift that I give whenever there's another newborn in my life. Can you guess what it is?
Amy, three guesses. First two don't count. It's Pampers Swaddlers.
Exactly. Pampers Swaddlers keep baby's skin dry, happy, and healthy. Pampers Swaddlers absorb wetness better than the leading value brand and provide up to 100% leak-proof skin protection and up to 0% skin irritation.
Pampers Swaddlers are dermatologist approved by the Skin Health Alliance, hypoallergenic, and free of parabens and latex.
Try Swaddlers with new Pampers Free and Gentle wipes for healthy baby skin. These wipes are 5 times stronger, gripping mess more firmly, shall we say, and making diaper changes a breeze.
For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand.
Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers Cash. Then redeem your Pampers Cash for exclusive Pampers coupon savings and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers Cash has no cash value. Amy, when I'm dehydrated, I get headaches. I get cranky and I don't feel good in general. Also, I am dehydrated a lot of the time.
Right. Because being good with the water bottle is one thing, but getting that sodium and potassium with the fluids, turns out that is the key to staying optimally hydrated. So whether you're looking to hydrate during your workout, while traveling, or at the end of a long night, Sports Research Hydrate Electrolytes have got you covered with over 65 trace minerals, 7 essential vitamins, and coconut water powder.
Crisp and refreshing without any sugar, this is hydration powered by Sports Research. Each box has 16 little stick packs that you can take on the go, whether you're headed to an exercise class, a night out with friends, or a podcasting conference.
And did we mention they come in delicious flavors from raspberry lemonade to cherry pomegranate? Stay hydrated with Sports Research Hydrate Electrolytes. Visit sportsresearch.com and use the code WHATFRESH at checkout for 50% off your purchase of Hydrate.
That's sportsresearch.com, sportsresearch.com, and use code WHATFRESH for 50% off your Hydrate Electrolytes order.
Diane, I have a big question for you about minimalism. I was reading recently Gretchen Rubin's Outer Order, Inner Calm, and I love Gretchen's work, and I'm definitely that kind of person. Like, everything needs to be neat because then I feel relaxed. But then I really stopped and thought about it. Like, she presents that as like the two of those just go together, right? The more neat your house is, the more calm you'll feel. Like, well, that's true for me. Is that necessarily true for everybody? Do people have different set points for minimalism? And does forcing your like perfect order on somebody else actually become stressful sometimes for that person? Like, is less stuff better for everybody?
I don't think anyone wants to live or desires to live in a state of chaos. And I think that someone said to me recently, it's like when I go to a hotel room and it's all organized, I just feel kind of good in there. And I was like, oh yeah, that's a perfect example. But I think about the two places where you kind of start and end your day. So one is the bathroom. When you start and end your day, you're usually in the bathroom. And so I try to keep that area as minimal as possible because it just kind of sets that intention again for the day, but also the entryway of your home. When you're leaving and you're like, oh no, I have this entire space that I have to come home and address. It's just out of control. And most often than not, I do think it's an outward representation of maybe some things going on in your life that you haven't addressed. And again, with three kids, it's not always perfect, but I think the fact that I can get in there and quickly tidy, that's what I think we are like seeking to have. We don't want to be buried under the weight of our things, because it's just, at the end of the day, it's so meaningless to have all this stuff, really. Like, what do we have to show for it? We have to show like hours of cleaning each week when we could be using that time for our friends or our kids or our husband or relax for ourselves. And so I think addressing those two spots, just even noticing, again, maybe someone's listening and they're like, I have no interest in doing this. Just take note. If you pull everything off your counters for a month, see how you feel, and then slowly add things back in. Just give it a month trial run and see how you feel at the end of that 30 days.
Let me ask a practical question. If you pull all that stuff off your counters and you find you don't need it anymore, is that stuff out of the line of sight and coming back? Like, okay, now I need, you know, I don't own a bread machine, but let's say bread machine. Is that like, okay, I can give away my bread machine because I don't make bread. And then I guess there's stuff in the other category, like my KitchenAid, which I use on Thanksgiving. I want to have a KitchenAid, but I don't need it on my counter every day. Are they different kind of categories?
Absolutely. I think that you kind of know. We know what we're using. We just aren't honest with ourselves. And I think that's the hardest thing, because usually there's emotion tied up in it, or it's like, oh, I can't believe I spent the money on this and I don't use it, so I feel guilty. But time is going to pass anyways. And if we're not honest with ourselves, then we're just going to have this, again, extra weight that we don't need to carry. And I think that's, again, something that I've learned throughout my journey of minimalism or simplicity, is that I just would rather be honest and address it now than to allow time to keep going and I'm just denying the realities of my life. And I have been frivolous before. Usually if I get really stressed out, I'll notice that I have the tendency to start online. Like, I go online, I add a bunch to my cart, and then I have this thought of, I visualize myself in that outfit showing up somewhere. And then after that time, it's not new anymore. And it's like, oh, you kind of already have a t-shirt like that too. So you were just seeking this little feeling that you want to feel. So again, just, it sounds like a lot of extra work mentally, but I just feel like it's a habit at this point. But okay, so going back to what you said, so pulling everything off the counter of the bathroom or like your KitchenAid and things like that. Expired products, I think you can just get rid of and you know what you're using and not. But the KitchenAid, my example would be, I have a bunch of stoneware, some really nice like Pyrex or stoneware dishes that I probably do only use on the holidays, but they are something that I am using in those seasonal times. But if you wanted to get really cutthroat, you could get rid of those things and then borrow them from someone. I am not opposed to borrowing from friends. I do it for special events. If I need a dress, I will ask my friends like, hey, does anyone have something I can borrow? And my closet's also open to my friends. So I think just getting crafty and resourceful, again, so that you can use your money on other things that actually bring meaning to your life.
I think the correlation, because I am a chaos Muppet as opposed to Amy's like order Muppet, in terms of like I go to Amy's house and it feels so relaxing to me. It's like very clean and orderly. And I'm like, I want to live here, but I live in my own crazy chaos. So I do think that you have to know your starting point. Like this weekend we had a warm day and I went and I cleaned out the car. Like, I pulled all the chairs, I vacuumed it out, and I got in this morning. I was like, I just was so relaxed driving the car. I was so happy when I opened the door and remembered we'd cleaned it. But I realized that set point of a perfectly clean minivan with three kids is not realistic for me. And so I do think that the set point is like, it's about figuring out systems. And I really like your idea of, I have, every time you do the laundry, this is a practice I've tried to get into, every time, and I have three growing kids, this doesn't fit you. And then I try to do it kind of once a month with the kids. Are you still wearing this? Do you still like this? Because the kids' rooms are so messy because they're pulling stuff out of drawers and 18 of the shirts they don't want to wear. And so I think that the putting those processes in place makes some sense to someone like me. Like, it's not really about getting to hotel room, but it's about cutting down on the constant, because it is true that driving a trash-filled minivan feels stressful to me, but keeping a perfectly pristine minivan doesn't feel realistic to me.
Yeah, I did this with the pantry. So oftentimes we will put systems in a place that benefit us, and we will put things on certain shelves, or this makes sense to me. And then we come back a day or two later and it's completely destroyed. Our work is destroyed because we are living with other people that we never gave a heads up. So my pantry, it doesn't look the prettiest. However, I have things on lower shelves for my 4-year-old and my 6-year-old. And it kind of gets less kid friendly as you get higher. But it's like, this is where they know they can come grab this bag and put it back themselves. Like, it doesn't have to be perfect. This is just easily accessible to them. And I don't know. I think when I used to do things my own way, I would just get so frustrated of having to come back and tidy it back up and tidy it back up. And that just felt like a waste of time. So it really does fit whatever your household rhythm is. I think that that's what you're going
for. I wanted to ask a question about, because before I wrote down something you said, because I think there's sort of like two things that are going head to head here. You were saying before, like, minimalism, it saves you time. It makes your life easier because you have to do less cleaning. And then Margaret was just talking about, like, okay, so I had to spend 2 hours cleaning out my car, right? You had to dedicate your Saturday to getting that minivan back to one, as we like to say. And then slowly it's going to slide back downhill and you have to do it again. So I think of minimalism as like, okay, rainy Saturday, I'm going to attack this stuff. But it's something you do when you have more time, when you have extra time, because it's going to be, minimalism is an extra job on top of daily survival. So at what point, because I think you're right that it can also be something that makes your life easier, not harder, which we're all about. So when does that switch happen? And then it turns from like, here's another annoying thing I have to worry about, to like, oh my gosh, I have an extra 2 hours in my Saturday.
Yeah, I think it's just that initial investment of time. And again, you can go as fast or as slow as possible. I think for sentimental items, you might want to go slower, but then some people like to rip off the Band-Aid and just get rid of it. I'm one of the second type of people. I need to just get rid of it. But I think even if you, the minimalists talk about this, it's called the men's game. And on day one, you get rid of one thing. Day two, you get rid of two things, then three things, and then four things every day of the month. And I can't remember how many things at the end of the month you've gotten rid of, but it kind of just builds this little momentum. And that's why I think in the bathroom, where you're not sentimentally attached to things, it's easier to get that little win under your belt so that you can move through your house much more, I guess, efficiently. But also, it's not going to take you a ton of time. Your bathroom's usually the smallest room in your house too. And so it just feels like, wow, I can actually do this. And spend 15 minutes on it, like, just chip away at it to where you're not having to spend 2 hours. Sometimes I just do that in general with cleaning. I'm like, okay, I'm going to deep clean, because I'm not a great deep cleaner. I'm better at tidying. But sometimes I'm like, okay, 15 minutes deep clean, and then I'm done. And then I'm going to take the rest of the night to myself.
But I mean, like, on a macro level, though, I mean, because you're saying, like, it doesn't have to take 2 hours, it can take 15 minutes. But I'm like, when do you get 15 minutes back? When do you get 2 hours back? Like, when does it start to change into something that you gain from instead of something you need to spend extra time on?
Well, I think, again, like Margaret was saying, it depends on what level you're starting at. If your starting point is a super chaotic, near hoarder type house, it might take you a little bit more time. But I think that, again, it comes back to your personality of like, can I get rid of things in a more cutthroat way, to where maybe if I do have boxes of things everywhere, I'm just like, hey, I'm going to call up the junk truck and they're going to come take it all away. And you're getting that time back right away, versus someone that does slowly go towards it. It just depends on how much I think you do have to sort through. I don't know if I can answer that on like a general idea basis.
Because it's practical.
Yeah. We're so interested in the show always. And like, don't do this because it'll make you a better person. Do this because it will make your Tuesday morning easier. And, you know, it's going to be better for you in the long run, not because you'll be a better person. And I do think that that is true for minimalism also. It's just maybe like the horizon line's a little longer for some of us.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, let's see here. So my husband and I have been married for 12 years. I would say that conversation happens like on year one, year two. And we just recently moved. So you think that you get rid of things when you move. And then we moved again the second time. And I refused to bring anything into my house that I knew didn't have a home. It was like, okay, well, of course the dining room table goes there. Of course my clothes go in the closet. But anything that was just kind of like, what is this obscure thing? We left it in the garage and we went through it together. Like, I kind of moved some boxes to one side. And then once I had gone through it, it was like, okay, I'm going to dump all of this unless you go through it. So we just kept it there as kind of like a landing zone of, let's not bring it in here. And I think the minimalists also talk about this. The one guy, Ryan, I think he packed up his entire apartment and he saw what he used over 30 days and whatever he didn't, he got rid of. Again, this is a single man that he probably had a little bit more flexibility there. But I do like that idea if you're trying to really get rid of things.
I really like that idea. And I think that idea, I mean, I know that when we move, it's like, okay, let's just move this box. Like, there's definitely boxes that have moved from every house and they're just still a box. It's like, why are we doing this? The box that comes everywhere. We're talking to Diane Bowden of Minimalist Moms, and we'll be right back. Amy, you know me well enough to know that my daily power breakfast is toast with peanut butter on top.
Toast with peanut butter. It's also, by the way, one of my favorite power breakfasts. So we agree on that thing.
We were recently together and we shared some toast with peanut butter. And I'm going to tell you, we used Hero Bread. It adds even more protein and fiber to that combo without adding any more sugar.
Hero Bread has remade the carby, empty calorie bread products into versions that include no net carbs, 0 gram sugar, and fewer calories, plus more protein and fiber, while still being super fluffy and delicious. I was not sure that that particular combination was going to be possible, but Hero Bread has figured it out.
Yeah, this is one I'm glad they let us try. It's like, it really tastes good. I've been trying to add more protein to my diet, and I would have thought that a hamburger rolls was not the place to do that, Amy. But all of Hero Bread's products, from rolls to tortillas to croissants, we please, offer protein and fiber, 0 to 1 grams of net carbs and 0 grams of sugar.
Start your Hero Bread bundle on their website and get 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use the code MOTHERHOOD at checkout.
I like this bread, people. It's hero.co and code MOTHERHOOD for 10% off your order of Hero Bread.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play, and we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.
Let's just say, what if there's somebody sitting here right now on this podcast episode who had a spouse that had a very different set point for what needed to be kept versus what didn't? When we, like, I'm thinking about, like, our front hall closet, it is prime real estate. I live in a city apartment. I don't have a landing zone. I don't have a car. I don't have a basement. I don't have, you know, a porch. I just have my house. And so our coat closet becomes stuffed with all kinds of the broken toaster nonsense, ends up in this coat closet. And we go to clean it out, and it's very hard because everything that we encounter is like, but we might need this. And it ends up being a source of conflict that I'm like, throw it out. And, you know, I have a partner who's much more, that's a little bit harder. How do you sort of come to a common ground?
Well, again, with the communal areas, you definitely need to get to like an agreement in those spaces. But I can relate to you because when we first got married, we were in 800 square feet on half a duplex, and we didn't even have that entryway coat closet. It was like randomly back in the back. And it was kind of a catch-all for all of us. But as we were going through those things, I don't know, for some reason, if it's out of sight, out of mind, it is easier for me to just rationally be like, okay, we're not using it. But for like a broken toaster, well, maybe we'll get it fixed. It's like, well, why don't we get it fixed right now? Let's get it fixed or else we're never going to. And what if, it's nice to think in what ifs, but I do also think over the age of like 30, we rarely it's very rare that we're becoming that what if. We should just live in the current moment. You know what I'm saying? Like, our habits and cycles are pretty, I don't know, the brain is malleable. So that's why I'm here today to try to influence your listeners. But at the same time, I just don't want to keep living for my future self. I want to just live for the now. And again, if I need a new toaster or fill in the blank for the future, I often can borrow it or buy it for a similar price, but it just is taking up space that you could use now for your current self, or you can leave it empty. A lot of our new house is empty right now because I don't really know what to do with the space. And I also don't have money to furnish it. So it's just like, we're just going to leave open space and see how this evolves. But I'm thinking of my dad, who's way more sentimental than my mom. And that has been a process. But I think what's interesting, you guys should look into Swedish death cleaning. And it's the idea from this woman, Margareta Moonsen. I don't know if I pronounced her name right. But she talks about how in Sweden, they really are currently, or they are regularly going through assessing what they have so that the future generation doesn't have to navigate that while in grief and while in mourning. It's like, I'm going to get rid of this stuff, set in these systems into place with what I want, like handed down, what can be disposed of, and just really thinking about these things. And I think a lot of people don't want to think about their mortality. That's a really hard thing to do. But for my dad, going back to that, when my aunt died, he was going through all of her stuff and he realized, oh my gosh, I don't want to leave all this stuff for you guys. So they're actually downsizing. This was a pivotal moment for him where he's like, I'm in my early 70s. I'm healthy. I want to do this now before I get sick and I can't anymore, or I leave it for you guys. So I think also just thinking about your kids and what you want to leave for them can be a motivator.
I wonder, because it's interesting about getting other people on board, because we talk a lot about how garbage starts at your front door, right? That like the things that come into your house are, whether you're taking it from like an environmental perspective or a minimalist perspective, it's just the second it crosses your threshold, it's on a countdown to becoming garbage. It's just, I mean, maybe there are some pieces, you know, I have my mother's china. I mean, maybe there's some pieces that you're going to hand down through the ages, but they're so limited. And I think we hear from a lot of our listeners about grandma or grandpa or mom-in-law or dad-in-law who arrives to every visit with armloads of stuffed animals and look what I found you at the airport and I love Sweden t-shirt that we bought on our trip. Like, what is our role in terms of controlling what comes into our house from other people? Do we have a choice over that, or do we just say, all right, that's going to get immediately passed along?
I think that we always want to come back to the relationship we have with people, prioritizing relationship over things. But at the same time, usually when you give a gift, that moment of connection is what you're looking for. You find joy in that moment between two people as opposed to the tangible item. And so for me, once I've gifted something to someone, they can do whatever they want with it. Obviously, this is a minimalist person talking. So I understand that not everyone feels this way. And also gift giving is a love language. But at the same time, as adults, to me, you should be able to manage those emotions. So I'm thinking about like my mother-in-law. That is a hard relationship to manage when it comes to things because she is always so generous. But we've had to kind of get to the point of, if this is something that we don't use and need, then I'm not going to keep it. And my husband has had to have conversations because, again, he's closer to her. But I think you just have to navigate, who is this? Is this an in-law or is this my family member? And then we would just want to navigate it in the best way to preserve the relationship, but also be honest and also let people know that you're trying to create memories over things. Hey, maybe you can give them a list of experiences you want them to go take your kids to such and such place, the trampoline park, the movie. Like, you'd rather have that than a new, what were we talking about? Cars, these battery operated cars that die. Like, if we can try and get that through people's heads, I think that that has been really helpful in my own life. But I know it's also can be a generational thing where people don't understand.
What about when it's your own stuff? Like, do you know the old George Carlin joke about other people's stuff is junk, but your junk is stuff? And then that's the difference. So I'm thinking about, like, I can be very unsentimental about decluttering.
Gimlet-eyed towards your spouse's stuff, right?
Right. I mean, I remember back in the day, my husband and I weren't even married yet. And like, you don't need 32 t-shirts from your frat parties from college, like keep three, you know, like there's only 30 days in a month and you have 45 t-shirts in this, like you have to get rid of some of them. But of course, if that eye were turned towards my like lipsticks I'll never use again, right, then the tables are turned. So how do you make sure that you, well, maybe this isn't a problem for you, but how do we explore our own, you know, blind spots over whether we might be contributing to the clutter with what we think is very important?
No, my husband tells me I do this. So I definitely do this. But I will also say it's been really helpful to me to have visual boundaries of, okay, well, if I have sentimental items, it's a pretty big box from the Container Store. And I have one for each of my kids, my husband, and myself. And any sentimental item goes in there that I want to keep. And again, maybe not every minimalist wants to do that, but this is the way that I practice it. And that's my box of, this is special to me. This is letters from my grandma. These are medals that I've won in races. This is my, I threw my daughter's like blanket that she came home from the hospital in hers. And she'll go through these things and see what's special to her once she's out of my house. But I think that's been helpful to me to say, like, you can fill this box, but then once it's full, you need to kind of go back through and keep that. Don't say that everything's your favorite, because then nothing's your favorite, I guess, is what I try to keep in mind. And then with clothes, that's, I think, an area that I have a hard time decluttering because I love clothes so much. So I just don't buy new hangers. My hangers are what I have in my closet. And then if I want something new, I usually won't buy anything new unless I sell something and make money back, or until I've waited for a period of time. Usually I try and wait 2 to 4 weeks and then I'll pull the trigger. But oftentimes, like I said at the beginning, I'm trying to fill some type of emotion with buying a new outfit that I don't really need, because I wear the same things. That's another thing, being rational with myself. I am constantly wearing like a uniform of sorts. And it's like, okay, why do I need to keep buying these new things? It just makes me feel good. And it's okay to feel good. And it's okay to spend frivolously from time to time. But I just want to try and stay within these boundaries as much as possible, because that's that acquisition cycle that we're trying to break.
Right. So how do we know? My kids are now 12, 14, 15. And, you know, there's some lingering items. Like, do you have a system for, as kids move through phases of the kind of things we're playing with, when do we know it's time to say, like, okay, let's transfer over from the remote control cars to whatever's next? And do you have a guideline around how you think about those kind of decisions? I know you talked about the bin, that like, if it hasn't been asked for a month, I like that system a lot. But is there more like, okay, we're kind of doing more video games, we can get rid of, I don't know, not video games, because we want them to be outside, but we're riding bikes more than we're doing magnet tiles.
Sure, sure. One thing that's been helpful to me, because I do think I've had a sentimental attachment with even my third child, because I know that I'm not having any more kids. So I have gifted those items to friends that are in my circle, like in the little groups that I'm in, and just so that I can see that it has a second life. And it's kind of like, I don't want to say it's on loan, but if I ever needed that back, I'm sure my friend would give it back. But it kind of just helps like detach a little bit more, because I can see it have a second life. So it's not necessarily over, because I think that's one of the things that gets us, we're stunted in not moving through the things because we're saying goodbye to that season of life. And I think that's really hard too. So
that's right. It means admitting something if you give away the Legos, right?
Yeah. And so also, I think that people that are trying to live a more sustainable life will have probably more environmentally friendly ways to get rid of things. Sometimes I will try my hardest to do that. Other times it's just like, I need this gone. This is taking up too much space. I'm thinking of you, Amy, and you're like, I'm trying to think of where you could have a bin of things that your little limbo box of where it could be. Maybe it's in that front closet. Maybe you need to declutter the front closet so that that's where your box can be on the bottom floor.
I think it is the limbo box. I think my front closet is that, right? It has become that. And now we need to go through it. And that won't be fun.
It is the limbo box.
Mm-hmm.
And say, limbo is over for you, broken toaster. You're going out. Diane, we're going to link, of course, to your podcast, Minimalist Moms. Tell our audience where else they can find you and your work.
Yes. So my podcast, as you said, is Minimalist Moms Podcast, available anywhere you can listen to podcasts. I have a book of the same title. It's more for beginners, but they're little mantras that you can just ruminate on throughout your week, like start today or just for a season. But those are just short little snippets that you can read. And then I will announce it because it'll hold me accountable. I'm hoping to start a new podcast here in the next couple of months called Clear Intentions. And again, as I said at the beginning, I have been practicing a minimalist way of life for so long now that I feel like my house is pretty much how I want it. But now I have the work to do on my mind and what I'm saying yes to. And so that podcast is going to be more practical tips on how to have clear direction for your life. So you heard it here first.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Breaking news on the What Fresh Hell podcast. We love to see it. Diane, this was a great conversation. Amy and I are going to work this afternoon. I can feel it already in my bones. Thanks so much for talking to us.
Thanks, Diane.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Well, hey there, busy mama. Are you looking for ways to make your life easier, your home less chaotic, and at the same time, add more joy to your life? My name is Deanna Yates, and I'm the host of Wanna Be Clutter-Free, a podcast all about letting go of the stuff we don't need in our lives so that we can focus on what truly matters. Don't worry, I'm not going to tell you to throw it all away or make you feel guilty about keeping something you love, no matter how many other people don't quite understand it. But I will give you practical and, more importantly, actionable advice so that you can make progress right away. And you won't just hear it from me. There are amazing guests, too. It's like having your bestie in your pocket, telling you it's okay to let go of the things that are not serving you and your family in a totally non-judgmental way. So join me over on the podcast where we can work on progress over perfection for those of us that want to be clutter-free.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tiny humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us